You're listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust.
Hello and welcome to the Events During COVID-19 podcast. My name's Molly. I am the Student Support Coordinator for Thomas Pocklington Trust Student Support Service. We support blind and partially sighted students to enter into and get the most out of their time in further and higher education. We'll be hosting our panel discussion today with Ellen from LOOK.
Thanks, Molly, and hi, everybody. I'm Ellen, and I'm one of the team at LOOK UK. We are a small national charity supporting visually impaired young people and their families.
Today's podcast is all about exams, specifically looking at how they might look different this year due to COVID-19 and how you can prepare to give yourself the very best chance and achieve your potential.
We have a fantastic panel of guests today ready to share their expertise, so let's meet them.
Hi everyone, I am Terry and I'm a third year medical student at the University of Oxford, and I am also the chair of the Oxford Student Union Disabilities Campaign, which is basically the kind of disability community within Oxford University.
Hi, I'm Charlotte and I'm studying education studies with special educational needs and inclusion at York St John University, and I'm in my final year.
Hi, I'm Robin Watson. I'm a qualified teacher for the visually impaired and also a professional support worker for the visually impaired in universities.
Hello, I'm Nikki Bolt and I'm from the Disability Service at University of the West of England, Bristol. And we support and advise students and applicants around reasonable adjustments, around funding and around things like sharing information.
Hi everyone, so my name's Jenna and I work as an Equality Act advisor at the RNIB, part of the Legal Rights Service. We're a small team and one of the areas that we do provide advice on is disability discrimination, and that includes around further and higher education.
Thank you everyone for introducing yourselves. So to kick off our discussion, I'm going to come to our resident students first, so Terry and Charlotte. So first of all, as we are talking about exams, could you both tell us a bit about how you manage exams, what kind of adjustments you require when you're taking your exams, and how you normally go about making those arrangements? So Charlotte, could we come to you first?
Okay, yeah. So my exams are mostly essay-based. So I like to do them on a computer, just so it's easier for me to type, and I'm a lot quicker at typing now than I am to write, because I do have useful vision to be able to write. And I normally contact, it's normally disability services or the tutors within the education department at the university. They've normally been quite good, depending on the lecturer who I have for the specific module. They're normally quite good, you know, telling me quite far in advance to try and get things sorted. So yeah, normally just typing on a computer, extra time is key as well.
How much extra time do you have normally?
Normally 100%.
And Terry, how about you?
Yeah, so I get extra time as well, somewhere between 50 and 100% depending on the type of exam. So I have some exams that are essay based, and I'd say my needs are probably quite similar to Charlotte. So I do those on a computer, partly because I can type much faster than I can handwrite, but also I have some physical disabilities as well that make it slightly challenging for me to handwrite for long periods. And I have the paper, either like a large print paper copy or have it in an online copy on the computer that I'm using. And then I also get rest breaks to sort of use as and when. I also have some exams that are more like multiple choice style questions. And those I tend to do on paper just because all I have to do is tick a box, and it's actually slightly easier doing that on paper than navigating on the computer because I've also got some residual vision. That's kind of how my exams have been up to this point and will be this year. Next year, I'm starting the clinical phase of my degree where everything will move to this different style where you're sort of being examined on how you would examine patients, among other things like essays. So that's going to be a bit of a learning curve next year to find out what that will be like.
Now to both of you, you've both been studying before the pandemic and have carried on through this last year. So how have things changed for you in terms of learning, assessments and just general student life? Charlotte, do you want to go first?
Learning has been so different. We use Microsoft Teams, so obviously all the lectures have been online. Everything's been online. I've not been on campus since March last year, so it has been a while. everything's kind of moved over to assessment based for me. It was going to be for my third year anyway, but I had placements and stuff in my second year, and so that all had to be rearranged and kind of changed to a more theory based, you know, being at home instead of being at uni. It has been very different.
How have you found kind of staying in touch with your lecturers and things?
It's been a bit of a struggle, to be honest. I'm doing my dissertation at the minute, and it's so hard to get hold of my supervisor. I just can't get hold of her. And you know, I'm just trying to get on with as much as I can until sometimes it's very hit and miss. Sometimes they will reply straight away, and sometimes you're waiting like a week or two.
Terry, what about for you? Because you're obviously going to continue studying next year as well.
Yeah, so kind of similar to Charlotte, first couple of years that I was at uni, obviously, was pre-COVID, and everything was quite kind of normal student life. I think things have been slightly less different for me than for other people since the pandemic, because I was doing a lab-based research project for most of this kind of autumn and spring, which I did do in person. So I've been in university the whole time, apart from last summer term, you know, just when things started to be problematic. But I also have lots of lectures and things which have all been done online, pre-recorded. I actually quite like the format of pre-recorded lectures, and it's something that in my kind of role on the disabilities campaign we've been trying to push the university to do for some time. Because Oxford's always been slightly hesitant, or particular faculties anyway, to have lectures recorded online. That's actually been really helpful from an accessibility perspective, because for the first time in my life I can both see and hear the lecture at the same time, rather than normally when I go and listen to a lecture and then look at all the slides later. So that's been good, but we also have small group tutorial teaching, and that's all been online, and I don't enjoy that format so much. It does feel kind of less personal, and just kind of, yeah, not having that feedback with staff on a kind of one-to-one basis. And honestly, I just kind of miss seeing people, seeing people around. Even though I am in university, you know, it's not, most people aren't here, and most of the staff contact is via Teams.
Have you had to make any adjustments to how you're doing like the practical stuff for your course?
So my lab-based work that I did for most of this year, there were some things where it was really difficult because of sort of social distancing measures. So I was working in a biochemistry lab, and I needed to be shown how to use some of the equipment because I've never used it before. And a lot of it is quite detailed, and I needed to be much closer to the people showing it to me than is kind of allowed by social distancing. So we had to agree an official bubbling system where I always had the same person show me things, and we just kind of had a work bubble because there was no other way to do it. Either I wouldn't be allowed to use the equipment, or I would have to be closer to somebody. And I don't even know whether that's a visual impairment issue. I think some of the equipment for any new member of staff in the department, they would have had to have done the same. So that's been the main thing, but that was a fairly simple adjustment. Next year, or sort of this academic year coming, is when I start the clinical aspect of the course in terms of learning clinical skills for being a doctor. And I think that will be probably quite different to how it has been for previous years, but I don't know because I've not done it yet.
So Charlotte, I know that most of your exams have been quite essay based. I know you had quite an interesting practical exam. Was it a BSL exam? Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so it was in my first year, the back end of first year, I did British Sign Language module. The exam for it was a practical exam. It was a 15-minute conversation with our lecturer, and it was recorded and then sent off for moderation. And it was quite interesting because my course lead at the time, she was very, you know, hesitant about me doing it. She didn't really know how things were going to work out. For the exam, we'd kind of agreed that we were going to like talk at a slower pace. One of the criteria for the exam was you weren't allowed to ask him to repeat what he said more than once. You know, we got that consideration where I could ask more than once for him to repeat something. Also, something that I didn't even think about before I went into the room was that he was actually sat directly in front of a window, and it was a really bright day, and I just, when I got in there, I had to say, you know, can we like rejig the room around, because I'm not going to be able to sit there 15 minutes and try and like sign when I can't really see what he's saying back to me. But yeah, it was an interesting module and I actually really enjoyed it. There wasn't any need for extra time because we just kind of went slower, and there was certain criteria that you had to meet on the like throughout the exam. And we just kind of worked our way through that.
Terry, for your assessments this year, have you had to, have you felt any differently about how you're doing your assessments, or have you had to sort of prepare differently for them at all because of COVID-19?
So this year, about 50% of my kind of assessed grade is based on this long and short dissertations that I'm submitting. So that has been pretty much the same as it would be normally, aside from supervision being a bit different. But I have four exams, sort of, you know, proper exams that I need to sit. One I've already had was an open book exam, essentially meaning that you kind of have access to the internet and your books and you have a certain amount of time to do the exam and then send it back. So one of those I've already done. I have another one of those at the end of May, alongside two remote invigilated exams. So I have a number of kind of concerns about both things. The open book exams, a lot of people prefer because you have access to all your notes, but something that I maybe didn't even realize would be an issue until I sat the first one was that I can't skim read, and the purpose of having an open book exam, I think, for most students is that you can sort of quickly have a read through your notes and go, oh yeah, that's what I need to remind myself of. But I can't really do that. If I want to read something, I have to read it kind of word by word, letter by letter even, because that's how I need to read.
Yeah.
It almost is as though I'm having to prepare as if it were a closed book exam, when everyone else is preparing for an open book exam, because even with extra time, I won't have the time to read the amount of content. You know, I'll be able to do things like, if there's a particular value, like a blood pressure value or something, I'll be able to look that up quickly on the internet. Skim reading to find bits of information in a long article, I'm going to have that already in my head pretty much, mm-hmm. As if it were a closed book exam. So that's the concern with that style of exam. And then the remote invigilated exams are being done by this software where they sort of take over your computer to stop you using anything else other than the submission software.
Yeah.
And then you have a separate device with like Teams or Zoom or whatever for somebody to watch you, and they have an invigilator per a certain number of students. And at first I was quite worried about how that would interact with the accessibility features on my laptop. I have been able to do a trial with it and it seems like it will be okay. It's not going to block any of them, which resolves it for me. But I'm an Apple user, so all my accessibility is not software, it's in the kind of inbuilt in the computer. So I'm not sure for other students maybe who use JAWS or other softwares that are kind of add-on softwares, whether they would get blocked by this kind of system. So although I've kind of solved the issue for myself, I'm a bit worried about some of the other students who get in contact with me in my role in the disabilities campaign. So it's kind of everyone's having to try out their own accessibility setup with it and see if it works. Yeah, there's a few things to iron out, I think.
Is there any other questions that you'd advise other students to be asking at this point, you know, about these kinds of adjustments that you might need for online exams?
I think an amalgamation of kind of my experiences and experiences of other disabled students I've spoken to is that it's really important to ask about what kind of software is going to be used for closed book exams if they're being remote invigilated, whether that's going to be on the computer that you're actually using to type into, and if possible, being able to test that in advance to make sure that it doesn't interact with the accessibility software you use. Also kind of thinking about how the extra time or rest breaks that you would normally have will work in a kind of exam setting. Mm-hmm. So for like an open book exam, if you've got lots of extra time and rest breaks, how do you sort of divvy that time up when there's actually no one there? Sort of, you know, it's not like sitting in a room where someone's there and you say, I'm going to take my rest break now. I think most of all, just making sure you've got contingency plans for if something does go wrong tech-wise, because we all know that a lot of the kind of accessibility softwares can make computers a little bit more prone to having a bad day. And when you combine that with some of the softwares that are being used for exams, I think it's worth kind of making sure you've spoken to departments, spoken to disability services at universities to make sure there's some sort of contingency plan for tech going wrong on the day.
Okay, thank you both. So I'm going to move over to Robin now. So Robin, you're an SSPVI for visually impaired students. Could you tell us a bit about what that role means and what kind of support you provide for visually impaired students, particularly with exams?
Yeah, so I work with students in a number of different universities, and the support I provide very much depends on the student and helping them with things that they find difficult, which is different for everybody. With regards to exams, I've done some supporting exams when students have had accessibility issues, such as the open book exam. So I supported a student last year during lockdown, and as Tiri said, she had to learn a lot more and memorise a lot more than her sighted peers would have done. But she didn't have to remember the detail. She kind of had to remember where things were in books. And then she could direct me to it and I could skim read the things for her. If students are particularly concerned about something like that, that's maybe something they could look into, getting either an exam support worker or an SSPVI to support them with that. And that's not to help them with the content of the exam. It's just to help them with sort of the visual bits. Mm-hmm. I've also helped students with multiple choice exams if they've not felt confident about accessing the exam. So we've done that where we've both been on either Teams or Zoom or something like that. And I've acted as a reader and a scribe. So there are lots of things that can be put in place for students if they've got concerns. I suggest that they talk to disability services in the university, also talk to the person who's done their assessment, and talk to their SSPVI if they're worried about things. The other thing I've done is trials of exams with students. So as Tiri was just saying, checking that all the tech works and just that you feel comfortable. I think if you're going into any new situation, just doing a trial run of it just makes you feel a little bit more confident and a little bit more comfortable.
Brilliant, thank you. Have you got any advice for VI students on how to make the most of the support that they've got available to them?
I think the transition from school to university for students with VI is massive. I tend to find that in school and college, your timetable is so tight and every minute of every day is more or less accounted for. And so there'll be people beavering away, hopefully, behind the scenes, sort of to prepare work and to do stuff. And then I think when you get to university, it's a bit of a shock that you have to actually ask people to do things. So my first tip would be, don't be afraid to say to somebody, please, can you adapt this for me? Or can you tell me where this is? Or what should I do with this? Or just to ask for advice and support from your SSPVI or from the disabilities team. And I think every university is very different. So, and every person is very different. Some people will go out of the way to be supportive and helpful and understanding, and other people just don't get it. And so that's very individual to the student and to the people that they've got surrounding them. Other things I would say is be proactive. So ask and check if there's anything you should be doing. I know that one university I worked in had posters up saying, if you need access arrangements, make sure you let us know on the disabilities team. And I made the assumption, I read that poster and I made the assumption that the disabilities team knew that the student I was working with was blind and the access arrangements would be put in place. But we did check and they weren't, and they didn't put them in place unless students specifically asked for them, even though they were on their student support plan. Students still had to be proactive and go and ask. And so obviously if you're a student with a visual impairment and you've not seen that poster, then you've missed out on doing that. So don't expect university to know everything. If you need something to help you, ask them. So if there's something that you specifically need, tell them. It's better for them to hear it twice than not hear it at all, and then you've missed out on something that you need. And if an exam or any kind of assessment or learning is not accessible to you for whatever reason, speak to them about it. But when you go to speak to them, have some ideas of how they might be able to change that to make it more accessible to you, but obviously still be a stringent assessment so that you've got a starting point. So instead of just going and saying, I can't do this, you're saying, I can't access this, but I could access it if we did it this way. So I had a student who, she can't write essays because she's got a brain injury. So she went to see disability services and said, I can't write an essay, but I could do a podcast, or I could do this, or I could do that. So she had about five different options, and they've talked through all of those things and they've come up with something that's suitable for all of them.
Thank you, guys. So we're going to move on to Nikki now. Nikki, could you tell us about some of the changes that you've seen this year across the university, and specifically around the exams and assessments for some of the different courses that are run?
Yeah, sure. So it's been a completely bonkers time, to be honest, absolutely unprecedented. And so when the when kind of the lockdown hit last March and the universities were closed, we needed to take, like everybody, I think, an emergency approach given the situation. And so particularly around controlled exams, many, many of our controlled exams have been replaced with a non-timed assessment taking place over a 24-hour period online. So there's been some misunderstanding about this and about how whether it's timed or it's not timed, for example, and we're just trying to be very, very clear that there isn't a time limit on there. It's just we have to have some kind of window in which for people to be able to kind of attempt them. And of course, like every new thing, it's just going to take a bit of practice. So kind of my perspective on the 24-hour non-timed assessment is that in general, it's a very, very inclusive approach, and much more inclusive than some of the kind of very timed assessments. But of course, as we know, there is no one approach that is going to work for every single student, for every single disabled student. There's definitely going to be some different needs out there, and there's still going to be some students who are going to experience barriers within that kind of 24-hour assessment. And so what we've done there is we've said, okay, that's excellent for the masses, and it's got some definite big wins there for our disabled students, but there's going to be some people who are still going to experience a barrier. And then in those situations, we're working really closely with the academic teams to try and look at an alternative assessment where it doesn't interfere with the student's ability to demonstrate whether they can meet those learning outcomes, but it is different. And I guess kind of longer term, we are kind of expecting assessments to change again. I mean, at the moment, we're operating on the principle that there's hardly any timed exams left. It's only really at the moment at UWE Bristol where the professional body requires this. And, you know, as we've been hearing before in this podcast, we've been exploring things like online invigilation. And of course, that is, you know, can be really, really challenging. But longer term, we're not expecting a major shift back to those controlled timed assessments. To be honest, we hope to see the back of the majority of those. But the new kind of direction, futuristically speaking, looks to be looking at kind of authentic assessment and to try and replicate how to test our students in a way that's related to what they would actually need to achieve, like in the workplace, for example. And so in some circumstances, that might involve some timed assessments, but that they probably wouldn't be controlled in the same way. And we're still finding our feet with this. But so, you know, for example, in my role, I would probably have to do some stuff timed, you know, in that controlled in that way. But I probably could look at whatever resources I wanted to in order to do so.
Sounds like COVID has triggered quite an evolution in exams and wider education. Thierry mentioned earlier that obviously accessible technology does place a strain on the computers and technology that's being used. So coupling that with these new systems and these added supervisions, it's kind of expected that there might be some issues somewhere. What should students do if they experience issues with connectivity or connecting with their exam assistant on the day of the exam?
Well, so I can't really speak for every university. I think the best piece of advice I would give is to be prepared that these things might happen, and find out in advance, ask in advance, what shall I do if this happens? What shall I do if this happens? And try and get an understanding of it.
Thank you. I'd like to move on to Jenna now. Jenna, the term reasonable adjustment has come up a few times, and generally we've got a fair idea of what it does and doesn't mean, but what actually is the legal definition of what a reasonable adjustment is?
So under the Equality Act, I won't go into it in too much detail, but it covers a specific duty to make reasonable adjustments to avoid putting people with disabilities at a substantial disadvantage compared to people who are not disabled. And that's actually section 20 that covers that actual duty. And it does mean that, as I said, higher education providers are bound by that duty, and they do need to comply with it. And they do not make reasonable adjustments, and they are effectively breaking the law. So, I mean, in the context of what we're talking about, so with the exams, it there's sort of different elements of the duty. One of those is the duty requires, say, a higher education provider to take reasonable steps to change any provision, criterion or practice which puts a disabled person at a substantial disadvantage. So that might be some kind of policy that's applied to exams where, you know, actually, you know, it is disadvantaging, you know, a disabled student. So they would need to look at making a reasonable adjustment to that. And another one that's relevant here would be the duty to provide an auxiliary aid or service. And that's without this, a disabled person would be at substantial disadvantage. And it does make it clear that an auxiliary service includes a support worker. That's where the Act comes in and talks about reasonable adjustments. In every case, what's reasonable, an adjustment will depend on the individual circumstances. And certainly in exams, it may include, which has been talked about already, which was really good to hear. So that might be, for example, yesterday, one-to-one exam assistance. So personal readers and scribes, those additional rest breaks, extra time, flexible deadlines, opportunities for students to test those online platforms in advance. That I think has been, you know, it seems to come out as a really important one today. We've been, you know, from what we've heard. And also, yeah, looking at whether there's alternative assessment methods which will be able to test the same competence standards. And just to bear in mind that an education provider can only make adjustments if they would be reasonably expected to know that the student has a disability. So we do say that it's recommended that students do let education providers know about any support that they may need on their course, and certainly in advance of exams as soon as possible. The duty to make reasonable adjustments is anticipatory. So that does mean that a university, for example, should realise that disabled students may want to study at their institution. So they should be planning ahead with that to make sure they do comply with the law. And that will include reasonably anticipating, you know, accessibility of online examinations and learning platforms. You know, needless to say, the university is not expected to anticipate the need of every prospective student, but they do need to think about and take reasonable steps to overcome barriers that may impede people with different kinds of disabilities. And there's lots of different factors that what's considered a reasonable adjustment is an objective question, and it's one that's ultimately for the courts to decide. But it will depend on various factors that are noted in by the Equality and Human Rights Commission in their guidance. And some of the factors that might be taken into account when considering if an adjustment is going to be reasonable are things like whether taking any particular steps would be actually effective in overcoming the substantial disadvantage that the disabled student faces in accessing, say, you know, an exam. So if an adjustment is not likely to have any, you know, very little effect or no effect in reducing that disadvantage, then even if it's requested by the student, it probably wouldn't be considered as reasonable. It will also look at the extent to which that adjustment is going to be practicable for the education provider to make. Other things would be about looking at financial and other costs of making the adjustment. Although just to bear in mind here that the Equality Act specifically prohibits the education provider from requiring a student to pay towards the cost of any reasonable adjustment. So that would be totally, you know, a university, for example, could never ask that. They could never ask for a student to fund something themselves. Again, what's considered reasonable? Another factor might be the availability of other grants and assistance that is available to the disabled student. The resources of the education provider will be taken into account. Other grants that may be available, like the disabled student allowance grants, and also health and safety requirements, are a factor as well. And I will just point out that the Equality Act does specifically identify that providing information in an accessible format is a reasonable adjustment. So, for example, if it needs to be in Braille, large print, using coloured paper, etc., that is specifically covered.
That actually links to my next question, which is around the legal obligations for providing accessible online learning resources. So with the transition to online learning, perhaps textbooks or revision materials are not always uploaded or formatted correctly for, say, screen reader users. Mm-hmm. So how would you advise students go about challenging inaccessibility and gaining access for those resources?
Okay, great. Yeah, so the Equality Act, as I said, does specifically say that you know, it is reasonable that an education provider provides information in that accessible format. So where it's not being, where it's not accessible for a student, then we would advise a student who is experiencing such issues to firstly approach the disability support services, as they may well be able to help resolve the situation in the first instance. It may be the case that they just don't realise there's a problem, and in which case the issue, you know, would hopefully be able to be quite quickly rectified. If it doesn't resolve the issue, then the next step that we would advise the student to make is to actually make an internal complaint following the university's complaint procedure to challenge the issue. So all universities will have this complaints procedure, and it should be found on their website, student handbook from the student union. And that just shows the steps that you need to take if you need to make a formal complaint. Many disputes can be resolved through this channel, and it is usually in everyone's best interest to attempt to resolve disputes like this without the need for legal action where it's possible. In the event that it does not work, it doesn't always, unfortunately, and you believe that the student believes that they have been discriminated against by their education institution, then they can make a claim under the Equality Act. And that would be, you know, through the court route. So in England and Wales, it would be a claim to a county court. And in Scotland, it's to the Sheriff Court. Time limit for bringing a court case is not that long. It's 6 months less 1 day from the sort of date of the discrimination. So it's really important to check that to make sure that no deadlines are missed. And if a case does end up going to court and it's successful, then, you know, there are a number of potential remedies that can be awarded. It may include things like a declaration that the education provider has unlawfully discriminated. It could include a compensation for injury to feelings. It can include damages. So, like, you know, they've had to defer a year, potentially, you know, loss of earnings because they've had a delayed start getting into employment. It may be an injunction, which is a legal term for saying that, you know, it's a requirement that certain action has to be taken by the education provider. So that might be, for example, to put in place a type of support, alternative support, so that the student can actually progress with their course, or it may be to actually put something in place to stop any further discriminatory practices from taking place by the education provider. We would discuss all that with the student, and we would also cover another option available, which may be right. Again, it would just depend on the circumstances, and that's making a complaint to the Office of the Independent Adjudicator. And that's an independent body. It's there to review student complaints, including of discrimination. It is a free service, which is really good. And although it does not investigate or make legal findings in the same way as a court would, it does refer to law and guidance on discrimination. And it can recommend that the higher education provider take action to do something or to stop doing something. And it can also recommend a financial remedy such as a refund of fees if other remedies are not appropriate.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Ellen, back to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Molly and Jenna and Nikki, for really good advice there from everybody. So thank you all so much for sharing all of your information and knowledge and experiences with us today. I just wanted to ask you all whether you have any final words of wisdom for students going into their exams soon in the next few weeks, in the next term, for any kind of final words of wisdom or top tips. Tiri, can we start with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think my top tip would just be to kind of try and get everything sorted as soon as possible. So not to kind of wait until closer to exams, but to get in contact with like disability services at your unis or whoever you need to as soon as you can.
Brilliant, thank you. Charlotte?
Yeah, I completely echo what Tiri says, and organisation is kind of key here, making sure that you have enough time to revise everything, setting time aside in the day to kind of either contact people or to revise as well, just making sure that organisation is there.
Thank you. Jenna, can we come to you?
Hi. Yeah, so my advice would be, is as soon as possible, really, for the student to get in touch with Disability Student Services and really have that discussion about what support they may need, to get that in place as soon as possible, and to keep that kind of an ongoing dialogue going. So if something's not working, to keep going back and making sure that, that they're made aware of that. And if anyone does, would like any further information, if they are having any difficulties or issues with their course, then they can always get in touch with our R&IB helpline, and we'll always be happy just to give them any advice.
Nikki, can we come to you for a top tip?
Yeah, sure. So thinking about if you are having one of these exams that's not timed but taking place within a particular window, when you're organising yourself and like kind of making a plan to get ready, try and find this out. So usually there's a planned time when the teaching staff are definitely going to be around. And of course, they may not be able to be around for full 24 hours. But even if you've decided a different time window when you're going to do the bulk of that work, to find out when that time period is that the teaching staff will be around in case you've got queries, and be kind of having a look at things and logged in around then if possible.
Fantastic, thank you. And Robin?
Yeah, I think my advice would be to echo what other people have said, which is about being organised and planning things in advance. But mainly speak to people. If you've got any concerns at all, speak to your SSPVI, speak to the disability services at the university, speak to lecturers, and just to make sure that you're comfortable with things before you start. And if you haven't got specialist support put in place, look to get that in place as soon as possible, because you are entitled to it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you. We'd like to thank all of our fantastic speakers for joining us today and sharing their experiences and wisdom with all of us.
Thank you so much to everyone who's listening. We hope you found this helpful, and we wish you the absolute best of luck with your exams.
You've been listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust. If you'd like to find out more about what we do at TPT, check out our website. Go to www.pocklington-trust.org.uk, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you for listening.